welcome to our podcast, Where Next? Travel with Kristen and Carol. I am Kristen.
And I am Carol.
And we're two long-term friends with a passion for travel and adventure.
Each episode, we interview people around the globe to help us decide where to go next.
In today's episode, we're meeting with Stephanie, a friend of my sister's who is an American living and working in Basel, Switzerland.
Hello, Stephanie. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Thanks.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We're super excited. So some things we'd like to learn today is just kind of what brought you to Switzerland. You live there full time. I know you're in the States right now, and kind of your story and then some great highlights about what was new and unusual for you, all things like that. And Kristen, okay. And I just are we super, super curious. So first thing we're going to do is I'm bringing up the map of Switzerland.
Yeah. Nice to meet you, Stephanie. My computer, I'm having issues. So the one screen where I bring up a map, it can't. And then I'm just bringing it on my phone. But I'm like, that'll work. We'll make that happen and we'll figure it out. But yes, no, we, and I don't know if you, Carol, has talked to you about our little venture or creation of this podcast was basically, so we were friends when we were in our 20s, the mid 90s or so, lived at the same apartment complex, ended up working at the same company. We found out, I think after, but not, it wasn't like we helped each other get a job or something. And then we would rotate dinners every Wednesday with my roommate, Carol, and then two guys or five of us. And so every Wednesday we got to not have to cook dinner once every fifth week and just became really good friends. And then of course, life went on. She moved away. We had kids, family. She moved to Colorado. I stayed here in California. And then through a Christmas card, we got reconnected a year ago. Yay! It was a year ago. And I was doing a podcast called The Future of Women at Work. And Carol was like, I want to do a travel podcast. And my whole thing, I was with the company for 24 years and got laid off. And my husband at the time, he was 17 years, got laid off. So I started my own. She does her own. And we love this kind of thought about digital. She likes digital nomads. I love traveling and, you know, being able to be remote and travel. That's my hope and dream. And our kids now are almost at the end of high school. So it gives us that opportunity to really kind of feed our vices of where we want to go and explore by learning and then sharing that information with others that are interested. And with COVID, you never knew, but exactly. You know, remote and travel are huge things that I think will continue as well, even well after COVID dies down. But I think it just stirred on us things that I think everyone has wanted and dreamed of course. And now we get to actually do those. So that's our story in a nutshell. Okay. But would love to learn about, so where are you physically right now?
So I'm physically right now sitting in Sedona, Arizona.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's right. You're on vacation.
Yeah. Well, we own a home here. So this is where we were living before we went to Sedona. So I'd say we started kind of our post-career life back in 2014. So my husband had taken early retirement. So Carol, we both worked at Bristol-Myers Squibb. And I met your sister back in the late 90s. Victoria and I have, I think, remained fairly good friends, been through a lot over the years, both in our different lives. Back in 2013, we bought a house out here as our future retirement home. And my husband took early retirement. We put our house on the market in Connecticut, thinking, I mean, the market was really bad back then. We thought, okay, this is going to take a while, so it'll give us some time to really figure out what we want to do. Lo and behold, the first person that walked in the house bought it. So all of a sudden, I was like, okay, we are selling our house in Connecticut. I am still working at my company where I had been for, at that point, almost 20 years or about 20 years. And luckily, management agreed to let me work remote. So I then proceeded to work remotely for 4 years here from Sedona, which was wonderful because I worked East Coast hours. So then I had my afternoons to do whatever I wanted to here. But, you know, as much as you talked about the benefits of working from home, I found it, you know, doing it for 4 years, it was a perfect opportunity for us to kind of create a new life here. I have one son. He was, at the point we moved out here, he was in his junior year of college, a very independent kid. And so he was in Virginia going to school. To him, it didn't really matter where we were. And we felt like we're always, you know, a flight away to get home if we need to. So anyway, so we moved out here. I worked remotely for 4 years, which I found rather isolating. I think video wasn't as big back then. And so it was really, it was, you know, you're on the phone constantly, which was great because my job, I was working with people in Asia, the Middle East, South America. It was kind of an international regulatory role. So anyways, I was doing that. My company was going through some changes and I knew in the horizon that they were not going to actually allow remote working anymore. That message had gone out. The CEO wanted people badging in at least 3 days a week. So then lo and behold, one of someone I had worked with who had gone to a different, I'd worked with him at BMS. He took a position at a company in Switzerland and we had remained in touch. And he kind of out of the blue said, "Hey, I have a position you might be interested in." And so that started in November of 2017. And, you know, personally, I'd say earlier in my career, we worked a lot with people in Belgium. And I would have loved to have done a 3-month rotation just to live somewhere else. My son was young at that time. And so kind of thinking about how would you manage school? Would my husband stay with him? That never actually came to fruition. But that idea of working somewhere in Europe was always something I had on my kind of bucket list, if you will. I just loved the work ethic, the culture. Anyways, I thought it would be fantastic. So, but it never happened. And then I had this opportunity. I went over in late January and did the interview process. And it took, I think, about a month or so before I heard about the offer. But then there's the whole process you have to go through. You know, the FBI, or they do kind of, you know, your criminal record, you have to have all of this detail. Like, what was your official position? I'm thinking, okay, you know, going to HR, when did I officially start? What were my official positions? So there was just all this paperwork essentially you had to do to even give them information to then apply for your visa. So I was going as a kind of local employee in Switzerland. So not as an, you know, an expat, but really going to be a local employee. So not having any set contract, going the ability to go for as long as I wanted to. So it all happened over between January, and I think I finally had the firm offer in April. And then it was figuring out, okay, how are we moving there? What are we taking? What's life going to be like? And so doing all kinds of research around. So, and I'm sorry, I know you talked about pulling up a map. So the company I work for is in Basel, which is the very northwest corner of Switzerland, which puts you essentially right on the border of France and Germany. So it's a very interesting location, I'd say, from a culture perspective. And Switzerland itself is an absolutely amazing place where you have the Italian, the French, and the German parts of the country. And there's the Romanish, which we actually, I don't think we've actually gotten to that part. But, you know, you just have very different cultures and languages within the country. And so I think that's some of the uniqueness of Switzerland. But anyway, so we picked up and finally moved to Basel in mid-June of 2018. We, you know, took the bare basics that we had. We decided that we wanted to keep our house here in Sedona. We weren't sure how it was going to work out. And so we were able to keep our home. So we packed up kind of the minimum things. I figured, okay, I'm taking all of my oldest pots and pans and things that were not ever going to come back, because I was at the point in my career where I figured this was probably going to be my last kind of high profile position where I'd have a company actually willing to relocate me somewhere. So I was like, let's take what we have to, we'll figure it out. And so, yeah, so we moved my husband and myself and our dog, which I would say was probably the most stressful part, was taking our 9-year-old little poodle schnauzer, who had never even been in a kennel before. We just were very lucky that we, you know, always had people that would watch him at home. So the thoughts of him flying, so the poor dog, he actually had a direct flight. And that was part of the relocation. So he got driven from Sedona to LA, spent a night or two outside of LAX. And then he had a direct flight from LAX into Zurich. My husband and I kind of both had 2 flights. So the dog was treated so much better than we were getting there. And so that's really how we wound up there. Actually, my husband had never been. I kind of did a little bit of looking around when I went to interview. The man I was interviewing with, he and his wife took me around, showed me the city. And my husband went sight unseen. He was just very open and willing to try anything. And so off we went. And we've been there ever since.
So Stephanie, the all like the paperwork you had to do, was that for that company specifically or anyone moving to Switzerland? They're really strict.
Yeah. So anybody moving to Switzerland, because, you know, you have to get, you know, as tourists, we can go there for 90 days, but to be there beyond that and to actually work, you have to have application into the government for residency. And so going with a company like I did, it was very easy for me because they really did the paperwork. I had to find all the documentation, but they really took the onus of applying for our residency permits, both for myself and my husband. They helped hook you up with, you know, unlike the US where the company tends to, you know, larger companies provide the health insurance and give you some options. There, it's really every individual has their own personal insurance and the company doesn't pay for it. So they kind of helped hook you up with some insurance, different insurance options. Yeah. And there's different types of insurance there. So, you know, liability insurance, I think we had, you know, personal health insurance, liability insurance. So if something happened, of course, the apartment insurance. You could also get legal insurance, which we never did, was if somebody sues you or there's some type of altercation where you need a lawyer, there's a specific insurance for that. So I was like, okay. But we were lucky again, going with a big company because they really handled all of the logistics of getting our goods imported. You know, we had to do some of that paperwork, but they really had a relocation that facilitated.
And how is the health insurance? You happy with it?
It is expensive. But
it's expensive because I know what I'm paying.
Yeah. And maybe not compared to the US. So I think for my husband and I, again, separate policies, we're paying about $1,200 a month and the company, okay. So the company doesn't contribute at all. It's out of pocket.
That's like California. That's about the same it's expensive then.
It's expensive. But so kind of, unfortunately, my husband had some medical issues and has been in the hospital, had surgery, been in rehab for many months. And I can't tell you, every time we would like look at each other, we would say, I'm so glad we are here and not in the US because it is just the opposite. They want to keep you. Literally, even before he had to have some tests done. And instead of going in and having, you know, come this day for this day for that test, they're like, no, we just come, we check you in. That way, as soon as, you know, there's availability for that test, then you are able to get it done. So they just want you there very efficiently to get everything done. So he had surgery and he had some recuperation issues, which, you know, took some time. I think the first time he was in the hospital for probably at least a month and then into a full rehab place for, I'd say, about a month and a half. And the care, just amazing. And you know, he had a menu for meals. It was like a 17-page menu that you could pick from. And, you know, we didn't have, it was amazing. And we didn't have the, so you were either kind of in the ward, which is the lowest level of insurance, or you could have semi-private or private. And he went with some pre-existing conditions. So we weren't able to get to that higher level for him, but his deductible was $350. And then after that, you know, he was in a ward, which meant there were a maximum of four people in the room, which didn't really bother him. He was very easygoing. But the care, the nursing staff, the physicians, just the people who, you know, do the work, I think they treat people there. I'll say there's more respect for more of the service roles than maybe we have in the US. And so it was just a very different experience. The one thing is most of it was in German. So he very quickly had to get his German skills up, which he managed much better than I still have. So
how has the language been? What's the language in Switzerland?
Yeah. So where we live, as I said, there's actually four official languages of Switzerland. We're in that northwest corner, which is German.
Okay. Oh, wow.
With that said, however, you know, there's all these local dialects. So we talk about Baseldeutsch. So they have their Basel-specific German, which is a little bit different. I think it's more of, if I've understood correctly from people, it's more of a spoken language than a written language. So officially in school, I think the kids learn in High German. But then the common language in the home and daycares, things like that, is the local dialect. So what, at least where we live in Basel, the city itself gives everybody that comes a voucher for, I think it's about 80 hours of German language classes. Yeah, because they really want people to integrate into society. With that said, there are just a lot of global international companies there. And so you can get by with English very easily in Basel. So we haven't had problems. Working full time for me, it was really hard. I was trying to, work all day, take some language classes at night, and with my husband being in the hospital, it just kind of made it challenging for me. And everybody in the office essentially spoke English. So, and I've also learned I do not have an ear for languages. That much more challenging for me.
I hear you. I'm the same.
But my husband's really good because, I would somebody would start to say something with me and I get stuck on that first word. I'm like, what did they say?
Yeah. It's me in English.
Yeah. And then, with German, they say you always have to, the verb comes at the end. So you have to listen all the way through and then you finally understand. I'm like, well, I can't get past the first word. So there's, but, yeah, so it's been an experience. And my husband, as I said, he picked up a lot more and found people wanting. So he was trying to learn his German. They were trying to learn English. So it was kind of that balance a lot of times.
Yeah.
I would say for me, Basel itself, because there's so many international people and English tends to be the common language, you can kind of be in this little bubble of, thinking you can get by. But once you go out into, I'd say, more of the countryside, you might face a little bit more of a challenge. But we all have Google Translate and you can do the best that you can.
Absolutely. So what are the four national languages? I want to say Dutch. I don't know why, but I'm not sure what in throughout Switzerland, what
So there's German, there's mm-hmm. French, Italian, and then I think they call it Romanish. So there's this one little portion of Switzerland.
So is it kind of divided up by the ones that are closest to France, the areas closest to Italy, et cetera? Okay.
Well, I'd say it's not necessarily because, again, where we are in that northwest corner, literally the parking lot for my company is in France. So we're that close, but that is part of the German speaking part of Switzerland, kind of that northern section. The French part is a little more to the southwest of Switzerland. And then you've got the Italian. That's definitely then bordering on the border with Italy is where you get the Italian. And then the Romanish is sort of in the eastern part of the country, like the very
Austrian?
Eastern. No, because Austria is also Germany. So it's south of there.
I'm looking at a map right now and it's completely surrounded by Germany, France, Italy, and Austria.
And Liechtenstein is in there. So Liechtenstein is like that really little small piece on the northeast part of the country as well.
And that's its own country, Liechtenstein?
That's its own country, yeah.
Wow. It's Singapore, huh? Tiny.
But to your question, it's interesting because when you go over into France in the Alsace region, wine region, the Alsace region, during all of the different world wars, that border has definitely shifted. And so, that part of France is very much, there's some French, there's some German. If you speak some German, a lot of the older people will still speak some German. So that's kind of a mix. But we always laugh because, literally, we can drive 5 minutes, cross into France, and it's everything is different. The pastries, the bread, they won't speak German. It's truly this French culture. It's just, you're like, okay, I just literally stepped over.
That's so neat.
So I have to ask, what's your favorite? Is there a difference between, I would think France, but I don't know. What's the bread?
It all depends what you're looking for. I'd say if you want really good wine and pastry, you go to the French grocery stores. If you want good meat, beer, then you're going to the German grocery stores over in Germany.
You have it made.
I'd say the negatives of Switzerland is it is a very expensive place to live. It's an interesting country in that, the unemployment rate is essentially zero and they actually bring a lot of employees in, I think, from France and Germany. Huh. But, the cost of living is expensive. Food is expensive. And
so how much is a trip to the grocery store or rent for a month?
We're just a single couple. The rent we're paying is $3,000 a month. It's a two-bedroom, 95 square meter apartment. But it's mm-hmm. a brand new apartment. So you can find less expensive, but we kind of wanted, My husband's requirement was we have two bathrooms, we have our own laundry and dishwasher, and we not have crazy rules. So in some of the older buildings in Switzerland and around Basel where we are, first of all, it's common to have the laundry in the basement. And then every person gets their laundry day. So you must do your laundry on your set day. Some of the older places, you know, there are rules like you can't flush your toilet after 10 o'clock because of the noise. So they're very conscious of bothering other people. And so they have these rules. There are a lot of rules. You know, no making noise after 10 o'clock. Nothing on Sunday. So Sunday is family day. And yeah, we can talk about that. It's amazing. Everything stops on Sunday. You can find a few little grocery stores, like the little markets open, like a little convenient type store. But other than that, essentially everything is closed. You know, restaurants will be open, cafes will be open, but it is family day. It is. I mean, you will see three generations out, because I think it's very common there for people to essentially stay where they are. You know, in Basel, where you have a fantastic university, you know, I know several people who were born and raised there, went to school there, and now they're there raising their children and their parents are still there. And so you will see on a Sunday, regardless of the weather, because that doesn't stop anybody, you're out walking or biking, you're with your family, you see the grandparents getting the little ones at school in the afternoon. So it's really, you know, that I'd say the nuclear family is still very much intact there. Yeah, not that everybody stays, but it is, you know, you do see it. And it's another thing that we love about Switzerland.
Yeah.
I would assume it's really safe too. I mean, that's always relative, right? Always the inner city, there could be, you know, some crime, but, you know, the stereotype in my head anyway for Switzerland is, you know, expensive, super safe, you know.
Yeah. So Basel's the third biggest city in Switzerland. It's about 180,000 people. I have no qualms walking home alone at night at 11:30. I've come home later, you know, you go out with your girlfriends and you come home a little bit later. Now, I know where we live. It's safe. There might be some parts of the city where I may not necessarily go alone at that time of night. Nothing is totally safe, but I'm telling you, they send these little kids, you'll see a little 4 or 5 year old getting on the tram on their own to go to their school. They have these little fluorescent or reflective like necklaces that the little ones, the first, like probably the kindergarten, what we'd consider in the US, the kindergarten kids, they wear those. Everybody knows they're that first year. And you know, they don't hesitate. They send these little ones out on their own to walk to school, to get on the tram. Yeah, it is amazing.
Oh, so, I can't get my high schooler to do that.
Yeah. One of our neighbors, so our apartment complex has this long driveway, and right at the end of it is a kind of a little international elementary school. And neighbors of ours are from Brazil, and their daughter, I think, was turning 9. And she was so excited because they gave her, it must have been some kind of like little wrist GPS type thing. And she's like, now they're letting me walk to school on my own. And I was asking the father, I'm like, come on, you're in Switzerland. He goes, no, I'm Brazilian. We don't let our kids go anywhere alone. So I think you'll see, like, the expats still tend to bring that same type of concern with them, but the local people, no hesitation at all. Those little ones just out and about they go. So
what great independence and learning. I can just imagine. Oh,
it is.
I need to bring my daughter there. Both my kids.
Well, and then there's the language piece. I mean, I would have, yeah, looking back now, if I could have raised my child there, I would have been so happy because, you know, the multitude of languages that are spoken. And of course, the little ones are sponges and they pick it up. And so, I mean, it's funny. I have a good friend of mine is actually from Ireland, but her children have been born and raised there. And I went over to her house one night and she's, you know, telling her son, okay, you know, you're gonna drive us to the restaurant. So he yells up the stairs to his sister in Swiss German or Basel Deutsch. So they communicate because that's the language they were kind of raised with. And so amongst themselves, they're communicating in their own language, which, you know, mom is, and she does speak German, but, you know, the kids are fluent in the local dialect. And so that's kind of their personal language. And so I know some parents who, you know, the kids can have their own little conversations because they've gone through the school system, learned the local language. The parents have no idea what they're saying. So it's
my goodness. Yeah. What do they teach in school language-wise?
So, and again, like a lot of international cities, you know, I'd say a lot of expats coming over, there is the international, well, the IBS, the the International School of Basel, the ISB. So there are international schools where they teach in English. And then, you know, it's kind of, I'd say, more of the tradition where the kids take their language of choice and some of it in German. The local schools, my understanding is it is mostly in High German. And they do, I believe they get some English, but don't quote me on that. So there's just a lot of different choices in schools there, mm-hmm. especially for expats coming in. And some people do choose to try to use the local schools.
Okay, got it. So English, it sounds, is even throughout the country, is English taught at all? I know in Sweden it's taught, but I don't know, you know, like.
Yeah, and I think it's taught. I don't know if it's required because, you know, sometimes we'll go, let's say, to the pharmacy and I'll assume the younger people will speak English, and it's actually not. It's the older generation that will speak English. So I don't know what the requirements or what the opportunity is. But yeah, you can't just assume the younger generation is going to speak English. So many of them do, but not always.
Yeah, it seems like if you live there too, and if you travel at all, I guess if you stay in your town, and I don't know how much cross-cultural, it seems like people that I'm Swedish. And so my Swedish families, they're all over Europe. They go everywhere and learn lots of different languages. English is spoken in all the schools, but having Italy, France, and Germany all right there, it seems like those would be important to know, but it sounds like, well, and we're Europe where Germany is anyway. So most of it, I think, is High German in there, but at the very bottom of Switzerland, do you know, is it, because Italy is down there. Is it Italian that's spoken there?
It's a lot of Italian, but you will find. So first of all, most government forms that you get, or, you know, you buy medicine, and the three languages that will usually be there are always German, French, and Italian. So I'd say a lot of, you know, federal communications that come give you all three languages. And then, you know, you can hear people if you go to a hotel. So we were recently down in the Italian area, down in Ticino, and people will flip from Italian to German. So a lot of people within Switzerland can speak, maybe not all three, but can probably speak at least two of the four languages of the country. So it's just, again, I have no gift for language. So to me, to hear people, to be able to flip like that, it is truly amazing.
And how is the weather? You mentioned something about the weather. I was curious what the climate is like year round in Switzerland.
Yeah. So when we moved there in 2018, I think the summers of 2018 were ungodly hot and humid. No air conditioning essentially anywhere. So we were dying, you know, coming from Arizona where, you have AC everywhere. Yeah. So the summers were beautiful. And I think we had a really nice fall. And we didn't see any snow probably the first and second winter that we were there. Last year or this year, it's been cold and gray. So it is very gray. I was happy to come to Sedona. It's not sunny today, but it was great to get here and have some sun because it's been really gray and gloomy. But we don't, you know, the mountains will get the snow, but where we are in Basel, we don't see, we've maybe had 4 or 5 inches, but that's like very rare. You might get an inch or so and then it melts. So the temperature tends to be fairly mild. I was born and raised in upstate New York, so I'm used to cold. So it hasn't been that bad. But then this year has just been, I think it's kind of a weird weather year for a lot of people. We had a very cool summer for the most part, and the fall and winter have just been kind of miserable. But
okay. Yeah. So it sounds similar maybe to like the mid-Atlantic in the East Coast.
Yeah, probably. But then, you know, you can travel an hour and be up in the Alps, or hour and a half. And so then you can get up where it's very cold.
Have you been skiing there yet?
So we skied. Well, my husband and I tried to ski once. So we weren't huge skiers again, being from the Northeast where your options weren't that great. And we hadn't skied for years. And then my husband had some with his health issues. We tried once and we didn't make out so well. I went with some girlfriends another time. I was a little overwhelmed, but I would say, you know, there it's just people just, well, actually, but you don't have to just ski. And again, another amazing thing, people are just out. There's skiing, there's snowshoeing, there's cross-country skiing, there's just hiking. Sledding is huge. You know, some places in the mountains, they kind of close the road and it becomes a sledging run. Miles of sledding. So, you know, there's all kinds of opportunities in the winter. I'd say we probably haven't taken advantage of too much of it just because of our situation. And it's different there. Like in, you know, in the US, you have the big lodge and everybody brings their stuff in and, you put your clothes and everything in a locker and then you put on your boots. You'll see people on the train wearing their ski boots and their clothes. And they essentially go from the train to whatever, to the mountain. And so it's the train systems have things where you can send your skis the day before and then they get delivered, you get your skis, and then you just go off and you ski. So that idea of having that big, huge lodge where everybody dumps their stuff is not the same there, but there are lots of places to eat and drink. They love to do that. When
they're I was going to ask, I think that's a big thing too, is the eating and drinking aspect.
Quick question about the sledding. Is it like dog sledding or like what kind of sledding? Or like how is the sleds like getting moving?
The little wooden sled that, you know, the old fashioned kind, it's that type of sled many times.
Oh, you're like going down the hill. Like
oh yeah.
Miles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, crazy. Oh, wow.
It is crazy. Yeah.
Wow. So they hike up or is there like an actual lift?
Usually a train. So, well, one place I know that we saw, like you took the train up. So everybody would get on the train with like a little local train. They get on with their sleds. They'd all go up and then they sledge down. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's an amazing place. And then the other thing is, again, family is so important. That one time we did go skiing, you know, you took the lift or the gondola up to, I'd say, mid-mountain. And then there was a lodge and there was just this little baby slope where the kids, and they had the chairs for the parents to sit there, and you know, just this very mild incline where the kids could either sled or try to ski. Always a playscape. So just very, very family oriented, that it's for everybody. And yeah, it is just amazing that way.
That's fantastic. In the snow or the winter, lots of activities, it sounds like. And what in the summer, do they also lots of outdoors?
Yeah, yeah, it's a country where can't quote how many miles, but thousands of miles of hiking trails. And mm-hmm. I mean, people, well, I wouldn't even say hiking, just walking trails, because it could be a paved path through a field. And so you have the Wanderwegs, just the wandering roads, and people and dogs, kids, strollers, bikes, everybody is just out all the time. So you'll be driving down the highway and you'll see this person in this field. You're like, okay, where's the nearest town? Where are they coming from? But they'll just be walking through the field, and you can easily, you know, 16 or 18 kilometers, just follow. They have all these routes. Everybody's got their apps and they follow, you know, everything is on your phone, and you get your GPS and you just wander and things are marked. So that is what, you know, people tend to do on the weekends. They're just out and about.
Right. So we had interviewed a gal from France outside of Lyon, and she said it's kind of the same thing where there's like these more like structured walks and hikes.
Yes.
And then there might be people with some bread or some wine along the way. Same thing there.
Oh yeah. You'll find in this one beautiful area, Lauterbrunnen, which is in the Bernese Alps. So in Lauterbrunnen is a valley, and you can walk along this valley floor, and you've got the beautiful snow-covered Alps on either side of you. And we were walking along, and there was a vending machine outside of kind of a little barn and house. They were selling their cheese, eggs, but just like things out of a vending machine. So there was that. And then we were hiking somewhere else one time, and there was an old house that I think was turned into a restaurant, but they again had like a self-serve area outside where people were sitting, where, you know, get your cup of coffee, put your honor system, put your money in, things like that. But yeah, you'll be in the middle of nowhere, and then all of a sudden there'll be a house and a restaurant.
Nice.
Well, you feel like you're in the middle of nowhere. I guess you're not.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds fantastic. So you said that where you're at is big for either US or big corporations that come there, and was curious, what industries are very popular there or positions that, you know, tend to be frequent?
So, yeah. Basel is huge for the pharmaceutical industry, which is what I'm in. So you've got Novartis and Roche are kind of the, I'd say the main, they're the biggest ones. You've got Lonza. I mean, it's a lot of pharmaceutical. I think Zurich is more of the banking, but yeah, we spend our time in Basel. So there is a lot of industry there, and it's, yeah, well, our neighbors, our best friends are actually Swedish, and she works for IKEA. So
classic.
That's great.
Yeah, it's wonderful. So yeah, so a lot of pharma, but there are other industries as well. I mean, sometimes you just assume everybody there is, and then you'll find out that no, you know, I work for a bank, or I do this.
Yeah. And you said 0% unemployment.
It's close to 0%. At least that's what my husband quotes. I haven't actually looked. You know, they keep the roads perfect. We'll be like, wait a minute, they just tore that road up like 2 years ago. How come they're tearing it up again and redoing it? And so, you know, there's just constant buildings are always being updated, painted, roads are being redone. So cleaning, you know, you go out. I go out for a walk early in the morning on a weekend, and the cleaners are out there. I mean, everything is just essentially pristine. With that said, there is a lot of graffiti. When I first went, and you're kind of walking around going, okay, there's a lot of graffiti on the wall. Is this a bad neighborhood? And then people are like, no, it's just something that people do there. I don't know why, because again, you're thinking it's such a beautiful, clean place, but graffiti is somewhat tolerated.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. Is it at least pretty? I know in Oakland.
Sometimes, but other times. Bad and- yeah. Sometimes it's just like, you know, initials and words and things like that. So not pretty. It's just there, but it's not an indicator. I'd say, like, you know, we would kind of stereotypically think, oh, this is a bad neighborhood. It's not like that there for whatever reason.
I know we heard the nuclear family is very big. You know, so what are there any other like kind of cultural customs that were kind of new? Do people watch TV a lot? Is everyone like what Netflix? I mean, here I feel like everyone's like, well, what Netflix series are you watching right now? You know, and we're all like on our screens. It sounds like people are outside a lot, but is like hospitality big? Do people have dinner parties? You know, we learned about like the coffee culture in the Netherlands. That was really interesting. Yeah. Like every afternoon you have a cup of coffee and you invite people in, and just any kind of like interesting kind of cultural, I don't know, habits.
And I would say, you know, we probably clung more to expats than local people. With that said, you know, in our complex, we do have, you know, several local Swiss people, but definitely like from a work environment, definitely a coffee culture. You know, I went over with my bad US habits where I still would like work over my computer at lunchtime and eat my salad that I bring from home or something like that, where people would be, I mean, literally scheduling coffee dates. And on the campus where I work, I don't know, there's probably 6 or 7 little coffee shops and people are out all the time. Pre-COVID, you know, it was really a part of the working culture was to have that, to build that one-on-one connection with people and have a coffee, have a conversation, talk work, get to know people. So that was definitely outside, like just in personal life. I'd say people do go out. Are there dinner parties? I don't know, because
it's kind of hard this right at the moment.
Yeah, well, exactly. But people definitely love to go out, and you know, we're still somewhat in shock when we pay our bills sometimes. But people there don't question. You know, you go out, I remember the other thing is, you know, you go out to a pizza place. Well, you get the, like, not the big pizzas like here, but kind of between the mid and the small pizzas. And that's for one person. And they sit there and they eat that whole thing. And then they have their coffee and croissants in the morning and they love their pastries. And I'm going, okay, how come you're all not huge? And I don't know if it's the activity, but you know, people are so health conscious there, and move so much. You don't see overweight people like you do here in the States. And so I think, you know, that this is something that we've taken, you know, you walk to the grocery store. We did buy a car, only because my husband thought he was going to be going off golfing. And so he wanted that freedom, but within the city for the grocery store, for work, I'm either walking or taking the tram. Many people bike. We don't do that, but the biking is huge there as well. But you walk everywhere and it just gets you outside. It's a 10-minute walk here or there, or 30 minutes. It doesn't matter. You're just moving. But yeah, I'd say people do like to go out. They do have that kind of cocktail hour afternoon. Aperos is what they call them there. So you know, very common to have aperos, work aperos, on campus with food and drinks and things like that. So that was nice. Or people just going out to have an apéro. Yeah. And everybody dresses nicely. You know, Sunday, again, we'll be out in our sweatpants or something. You're looking at other people and you're like, oops, I guess we're supposed to dress a little bit nicer.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So just a very, I don't know, respectful, sophisticated type culture is the way we feel.
Okay. And I was wondering also about, I was going to say on that note, traditions, holiday coming up, do they celebrate Christmas? You know, all of that side too.
So Christmas, and if we'd had kids, we probably would have known a lot better. So Christmas, they do celebrate, but more in the early part of December. So they have, and I'm not going to remember the names, but there is like a man that comes all dressed in black. And then there's one dressed in red. So it's kind of, again, that good, bad, and you get the little treats from them. So that tends to be early. I think it's early December. But yeah, I'd have to look it up and send it to you. But there is definitely, that's before, and you get a little treat. And you'll find at the little local bakeries, they have certain baked goods depending on the season and the holiday. And so for Christmas time, because the kids are supposed to give this man when he comes to their house, It's kind of almost would remind you of a gingerbread man, but it's made out of a sweet yeasty dough. And so you'll see those in all of the different bakeries. So there's that piece. You know, Christmas, again, the same Christmas lights everywhere. In Basel, we usually have a beautiful Christmas market. They did have it this year. It was a little bit smaller, but beautiful, beautiful lights throughout the city. And so that's a big thing. Then in the fall, we have Herbstmesse, which is an autumn festival, very much like the Christmas markets, where you just have booths of people selling our little shacks almost, or what you call them, stalls, selling different handmade goods, food, all kinds of food. Yeah, people love to eat and drink. And again, I'm like, how do you eat all this fried food?
And I wondered also in Sweden when I was there, everything was super small. So like their juice glasses were tiny. And then instead of a half gallon milk, it was a quart of milk. I don't know if the sizes are different there, or it sounds like the pizza isn't. But
pizza isn't. But yeah. And, you know, again, that idea of, you know, you go to the market and you get what you need, because your refrigerator, you know, our refrigerator and freezer are very small. You don't go to Costco there, or at least we didn't. You just buy, you know, you buy what you need for a day or two. And then my husband would go out, or I'd stop by on my way home, or he'd go to, we have a farmer's market in our little town center, essentially 7 days a week, every day but Sunday. And so, you know, the little local farmers come, and he had his favorite fruit person and his favorite cheese person. And so, yeah, it's, now, local people do it. I don't know if it's people like us that think it's such a cool novelty that we go, but you do see the local people, you know, the older people, you can tell they're Swiss, they're there, they're buying their vegetables and flowers, and it's wonderful.
Sounds fantastic. Did you have a question, Carol? I apologize.
Oh, no. So do they have like the big supermarkets like USN? Okay.
So yeah, I'm trying to think in Switzerland. So you do have bigger ones. Yeah, there's a couple of bigger ones. And a lot of people, again, we were kind of talking before about the costs, you know, especially people that have families do tend to go to France and Germany, because the price is so much less expensive. And, you know, I can't fault them at all, because if you're raising a family, meat products especially are very expensive. I'd say the produce isn't as bad, but definitely things like meat and fish, They are expensive. And so that's where you tend to see people. They limit what you can bring back. And the Swiss are very proud. You know, they want their Swiss chicken and they want their Swiss beef. But then people like us coming in would say, okay, but I want to feed my family. So I'm going to go shopping over here.
Kind of just a little odd question. I don't want to get political or anything, but like the global warming, is there a lot of like, hey, do you see them taking a lot of steps to help prevent that? Or do they care about it? Is it like a number one priority? Do you just hear about it generally?
So yeah, as a country, and I can't quote a number, but again, it's a very high percentage that they, so I think they do use nuclear, they do use solar and water, obviously, because there's a lot of water, but very little fossil fuels. So they are, I believe they try to get away from that. It's like our garbage. So You buy your garbage bags, and that's kind of how you pay your fee for garbage, is you go to the grocery store and you buy your 10 baby sacks, and it's probably $22 $20 for 10 garbage bags that you would kind of put in your under sink garbage bin. And those garbage bags are then burnt. Now you recycle glass, you recycle paper, definitely glass, tin, and cardboard and paper. You have to sort everything, but the waste that you, and bio waste. So everybody has their bin for their, you know, all of your vegetables and things like that. But they burn it. And I was really surprised about that, but I think they have a burning system that's very clean. So they're not putting pollutants in, because they are definitely very climate oriented. You'll see a lot of protests there around, you know, climate change. So there is a lot of passion and activism about it there. And again, people are outside all the time. So I think they take pride in nature. And, you know, there the glaciers are starting to decline like everywhere else. And so that is something that I think people are very sensitive to.
Okay. All right. Thanks for that.
But with that said, the one thing they do is smoke a lot. I don't know who it is, but you'll be walking down the street and it's constantly like, who's smoking? Because in the U.S. now you're kind of like,
smoking is so old fashioned. Yeah,
exactly. Waiting out for the tram at 6:30 in the morning, and you'll be like, who's smoking?
So smoking is something. People can smoke indoors, I'm assuming.
No. So no, not indoors. But when we first moved there, I love the fact that all of these little cafes and restaurants and bakeries have tables outside and they'll have the sheepskin over the chairs or fleece blankets. It's like everywhere. Oh my God, that's so wonderful. People want to be outside. And that's when you're like, oh, that's so they can go sit and smoke and be warm and eat and drink outside. So I think it's just, I mean, not that some people just want to be outside in the fresh air, but I do think it's to accommodate the smokers that they have these wonderful seating areas outside.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
That's amazing. Yeah. Well, I was curious also just, you know, traditional, like the cities to visit, if you were, Carol and I were to come over there, where should we go? I mean, this is Alps, it's amazing. And the outdoors is what we like to do as well. But what would you say if you had, 2 weeks to a month to go to Switzerland, what would you suggest that you need to do?
Yeah. And it's amazing in that you can be in a beautiful city like Zurich. So Zurich or Lucerne, if you want a beautiful kind of traditional city, we debate between Zurich and Lucerne as to which one we love most. And we actually haven't been to Geneva. So we haven't gotten all over Switzerland. I think between COVID and, you know, some of our personal reasons, we haven't traveled as much as we really thought we would. But, you know, you have the beautiful old cities that you can see, but then you can be in the mountains in no time. So I would say like Zurich and Lucerne are just beautiful to see old cities. Then we always take people. So Carol, when your sister came to visit me, we took her over to, you know, we went over to the Alsace region because you have places like Colmar, or we didn't go to Strasbourg with Victoria, but I took her to Colmar, which is this beautiful, I think they call it the Venice of France, just this beautiful little.
And how do you spell that, Stephanie?
Colmar, just Colmar.
Okay, let's try to find it.
And there's beautiful little wine villages over there. So you go to Colmar, you go to some of these little beautiful Alsatian wine villages where they make their local wine. So wonderful white wines. So, you know, we always do that. That was one of our things. Then you can go to, if you want to go to the French part, you go to Gruyère in Switzerland. And, you know, Gruyère cheese, but there's this beautiful old Gruyère medieval city that you can easily get to and walk around. And then there's the Alps. And so there's different parts of the Alps and everybody has their favorite places to go. You know, we haven't talked at all about the transportation in Switzerland is, of course, as you've heard, you know, the trains, if they're even a minute or two late, there's usually an announcement, an apology that, sorry, we're 2 minutes late. You can have a connection that's 5 or 6 minutes and be like, oh my gosh, I'm not going to make it. You will make it because they, you know, they time it. And they have that, you know, usually they know where people are going. So you'll probably get off of one train, cross over, get to the next one. So
with precision. Yes,
exactly. With Swiss precision and cleanliness. Yeah. Not to look down on the Germans or the French, but you can tell when you're on a Swiss train versus a French train or a German train, because there are differences.
So we could go visit Switzerland without a car, without renting a car.
You can go visit Switzerland without a car. I mean, sometimes it's quicker to go by train because you're going under mountains, you know, tunnels everywhere, tunnels. Sometimes it's quicker by train. Sometimes it is more convenient by car, but I say you can get to the major cities. You can be in some place like Zurich or Bern, which I didn't mention. Bern is another, that's our capital. And that's just a beautiful old city as well. Not one on a lake. It has a river going through, but cities like Zurich and Lucerne are on the lake. And so that just adds to the beauty of those cities. But yeah, between the buses and the trains, it's very easy to get around.
Well, it made me think when you guys were talking about precision Swiss watches, which everyone always knows about. Swiss
and
watches.
And chocolate.
On time and cheese. Yeah. That's great. But yeah, definitely. So what's the best Swiss chocolate, the chocolatier?
So my personal favorite is Lauterach, which is, not one that you buy outside. You know, Linz is there that you can get, you know, we brought some of that back, but the local stuff there, I mean, Lauterach is my favorite one.
And why? Why is it your favorite?
It's probably like the first one I had when I was there, because it was right in the little market square in Basel. And I went in and they have, you know, huge hazelnuts. I love nuts. So chocolate and nuts are paradise to me. And so, yeah, but then, you know, you go and you kind of live in a bubble when you don't, you know, like we don't watch the local politics. Some of our friends that speak some German do, but it was very easy with everything that was happening here over the past few years to kind of look at the US and be like, it's total chaos. But then, you know, I'm sure there's stuff happening in Switzerland as well, but we could kind of ignore that because we didn't watch the local news. So yeah, it's not all perfect there, but for the most part, for somebody living there, for us, we could be in this perfect little bubble and just think it's the most pleasant, beautiful place to live. So.
And is the chocolate, is it milk chocolate, dark chocolate, or just everything?
It's both. I'm a milk chocolate person personally. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, you can find both and they do eat it for dessert and yeah, it's.
Why not?
And you get a hot chocolate there and it tends to be this like very thick syrupy chocolate, not like our little Nestle's hot chocolate mix.
So, whipped cream on the top, yeah, and like sprinkles.
It's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's great.
So do you think you'll plan to stay there after the work is over or? Maybe down to somewhere new, Portugal, Spain.
So Mexico. We are actually planning our move to Portugal February 28th. So we are on our way out of Switzerland.
Great. We're going to interview in like 6 months.
Interview me in 6 months. This we're doing on our own. This is really our retirement phase. So Switzerland is wonderful, but as I said, it's expensive. We couldn't afford to be there. First of all, we couldn't stay and not work. And so we've been, working towards getting our residency in Portugal. And that's our next stop because we've decided we want to spend, we didn't get to see as much of Europe as we'd hoped to. And I'm kind of ready to get out of the work piece and just start to really enjoy life. And
I so want to go to Portugal. I can't wait to hear about it. I've been like studying up on it a little bit. The oligarchs.
Yes. When we were creating this podcast, she was talking always about Portugal.
And we've yet to find someone to interview. So,
all right. Give me 6 to 8 months, yep, Carol, yeah, and we can talk. It's going to be very different, but we're looking forward to the change and
especially the not working part of everything.
Big changes. Where are you going to move to in Portugal?
So we're going to start, we're going to be renting an apartment outside of Lisbon in a place called Parede. So kind of on the way to Cascais, southern. So the way Portugal goes, so you've got Lisbon kind of here and then it goes up and around. So we'll be in this area. So it's about a 20-minute train ride from Lisbon.
That sounds fantastic.
All right. So we have we call rapid fire questions that we ask everyone. Unless you have any other questions, Kristen?
No, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much.
Really good. Okay, so what's the popular religion there? Is it Catholic or Protestant? Or?
So I'm going to say Protestant, but I don't know. And the thing you have to do is if you participate in a church, you have to document that and you pay church tax. So we're not religious. We didn't sign up for one, but I think I would probably go with Protestant.
Great. And we did talk about some popular foods. What are one of your favorite foods to eat outside of chocolate, like in meals, maybe? Is there like a certain dish that is very popular, chicken or lamb or?
Yeah. So when people think about Switzerland, they think of fondue. I actually like raclette, which is the hot cheese. And then you get some boiled potatoes and pickles and pickled onion with it. And it's a very winter thing. And, you know, fondue gets too gooey with just the bread and the cheese, but this one you get, it's raclette is what I love.
Pickles.
You spell that?
That's amazing.
I know.
R-A-C-E-L-L-E-T-E, I think. Raclette.
Oh, yummy. That sounds much better. Yeah.
That's good.
And then say you were in Switzerland today, what would you have had for breakfast? What's common?
I would have had muesli. Muesli, okay. Yeah.
That's my thing.
I would say my husband would have gone out, though, and had an espresso and a croissant because that's what he likes.
Nice. And then what kind of music is popular there? Is it very Western or is there something kind of unique to the country?
So I would say it's very Western, especially I guess the places we go, the music you hear, it's very Western, but then you do hear the yodeling and the doot, the long horn when you're out in the mountains. And so.
Gotta have that. You got that with the big horn and the yodeling.
Very good.
For sure.
I'm just going to assume there's no surfing. I don't see any oceans nearby. Unless people do it on the water in the lakes.
They do it on the water. So in Bern, when we were there in the summertime, I think our first summer there, off of a bridge. So it's more of, what do they call it when they go behind boats on the surf?
Well, that's my jam. I compete and I do a competition for California wake surfing.
Wake surfing. So they do that off of bridges. And so it's kind of like a bungee cord. And so they go off and then they surf So you do see some surfing in that regard. Yes. And somebody outside of our building has a kite surfing van, and I'm not quite sure. So they might be doing like kite surfing on some of the big lakes because you have huge lakes and wind. So.
Okay, great. And just the last little question, money, what's the money in Zurich? Are you guys in the Euro?
No, because Switzerland is not part of Europe. It is its own country. So they have the Swiss franc.
Oh, the Swiss franc.
And you can get a $100 bill, a $200 bill, and you can go to your market and buy $5 worth of lettuce, and they will break a $200 bill usually without blinking an eye.
Oh, that's just fun. Nice little interesting.
And there's no pennies. The smallest is a 5-cent coin. That's the smallest that they go to.
Thanks. Okay.
Okay. Well, we are right on schedule. Thank you so much, Stephanie. Okay. I'm so glad we got to connect with you with this easy time zone while you're on vacation. So this is great.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Thank all you right. so and much. We enjoy so much to learn about the different countries, and this was just amazing. So thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Perfect.
All right. Have a great Merry Christmas.
All right. Happy holidays.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
If you enjoy our podcast, be sure to subscribe to our show, rate us in your podcast app, and follow us on Instagram at Where Next Podcast. If you are interested in being a guest on our show or would like to nominate someone, please contact us on our website at www.wherenextpodcast.com. Thanks for listening.